I think there is definitely a line of DC that just wants to make films to piss Chris Wisdom off.
Yeah, it's like, that's what it feels.
These days, the comic book owns pop culture, literature, movies, television, even music. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're breaking the panel.
Welcome to Breaking the Panel, where we are your weekly download for everything that is awesome in the news of comics and all comic-related media. We got TV, we got movies, we got all kind of great stuff to talk about today, and an awesome guest that we're going to get to. First, I'm the rock god of podcasting, Charles McFall, and in my Little Pony collection, we've got the My Stranger Things pony, Paul Klotz. I could go back to the original name. I was going to give you My Whiny Pony, because you won't give me anything to work with. Fine. And then My Waller's Gangster Pony is Chris Wisdom.
Yeah, she is.
And our very, very special guest, my prize pony of all, we've got the My Bojack Horseman Pony, Tony P. Henderson.
Hey, guys. How you doing? It's somewhat appropriate.
So, you know, you would say, or we could go with the Geek versus Pony. That one I thought of it too late.
Ooh, I'll take that.
Yeah, Geek versus Pony would have been a good one. So, Tony, really quick, of course, we're going to talk about your show as we go through this whole thing, but we want our whole audience to know who you are. What is going on with you right now?
My name is Tony. I'm the one of the hosts from the Geek versus Week podcast. You can find us at geekversus.com. Right now, I'm just prepping for Dragon Con. That is, We're also coming up on our 100th episode. That's a big deal. But in all honesty, I'm excited for Dragon Con.
Well, I'd be bad if you weren't, because then why would you go?
As I say that, I'm looking at a shadow box of old badges.
Yeah.
So that kind of takes the front of my mind, you know, prepping for DC and getting ready for that.
So there you go. I've been listening to Geek versus Week, because I can't listen to Geek versus TV. You are way ahead of me on TV stuff, and I'm afraid of spoilers and some of that.
No, that's cool, man. I appreciate you listening to any of them, so thank you.
Yeah, it's a good show. Everybody should definitely check it out. It's fun. I was telling Chris and Klotz beforehand that the new host you got, his name is it Chris?
Chris, yeah.
Yeah. He's younger, and he really doesn't give a crap, and it reminded me of how much Klotz gives me so much grief sometimes. It's a lot of fun there. So before we get started, we want everybody to know about our email, btp@giantsizeteamup.com. That's how you can reach us. That's B as in breaking, T as in the, P as in panel, btp@giantsizeteamup.com. Please email us. We want your discussion. We want to bring you in. You can go to giantsizeteamup.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find a speak pipe right there. You can leave a message, and we'll play it on the show. And, of course, if you love what we do and you want to become more of what we have going on, patreon.com/breakingthepanel will get you there. You can help us out. So this week we don't have any new email, but we do have this from Paul Klotz about the Suicide Squad. What you got, Paul?
Well, you know, obviously last week we recorded the episode where we discussed it. We had our big round table that we always like to have for the big releases.
Right.
So there's been some further news about Suicide Squad. One of the things we talked about last week, if you didn't catch that episode yet, without getting into too many spoilers, is the sudden awkward absence of a certain painted fellow who was amped up as being a big part of the film. And then when you see the film, he had maybe 10 minutes of screen time in the entire thing. So there's a couple of
interesting articles. A point you made was it kind of felt like Joker porn a little bit, like he was just there for fan service. There's only one or two scenes that were relevant to the story that he was
right
in, out of that 10 minutes.
Yeah, and those couple scenes felt like they were chopped in such a way that they were just there to satisfy, you know, the Joker quotient, if you will, or the quota,
yeah.
You know.
Almost felt like it was from a separate movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's cut that in there real quick.
Yeah. So Jared Leto, this first one here, he was at a little event. I'm pulling up the name of it right here. It's
Camp Mars.
Camp Mars, which is for fans of his band, 30 Seconds to Mars. And apparently it's a relatively, you know, it's a mini festival. It's not super big, but he was speaking to some fans And he was talking about how he felt he was sort of tricked into being a part of something that had been pitched to him very differently, is the direct quote. So basically that he, as the Joker, was kind of sold to him as being completely different than it was represented in the film. Though, to be fair, he is self-admittedly not seen the final theatrical cut, mostly out of disgust, I guess, for the fact that, you know, what has been done with it and everything. He's frustrated that many of the scenes he filmed and everything were missing. Now, the other thing is, he mentioned that Warner Brothers, his contract with Warner Brothers had some crazy limitations. They made him sign a contract that stopped him from partaking in the likes of rock climbing and other dangerous activities to prevent injury. And it's alleged that he might have responded to this by yelling something along F him and just doing whatever he wanted anyways. So basically, like, this speaks to a couple of different things here. You know, the first thing being that he obviously is also upset with the way his character was treated in the film, because he, from what I understand, some of the articles I read, leading up to it, he really took it seriously. You know, he approached it as like he knew what he was getting into. He's getting into a legendary character, a character that is, I mean, Batman is one of the most popular characters of all time, and Joker is right next to him. You know, that they go hand in hand, but they're also independently also, you know, both very popular. So he knew he was assuming a mantle of somebody really important to a lot of people. He took it very seriously. It sounds like they had him filming a ton of scenes.
That's what he said, apparently, in the interview with BBC5 earlier this month. Was he felt like he had shot enough scenes to have his own Joker film, which is not at all what we see in the theater.
Right. No. And then later this week, it was the producer that came out and essentially said, yeah, it wasn't all usable. We like to see everybody put their heart and soul into what they do. But at the end of the day, we can't use every bit, and not every bit is worth using.
Well, that's so
it's like a backhanded shut up, Leto, because you weren't as good as you're portraying. So,
well, I did hear, too, though, that they recut the movie once or twice, so I don't know.
Well, yeah, there were two competing cuts. There was Ayer's cut, and then there was the studio came in and did their cut, and I believe the studio's cut, and I'm doing air quotes here, was the one where they brought in the marketing company that came and did the trailers that were so well received. They came and had them do a cut, and I believe that's what's referenced whenever you see them talk about the studio cut. I believe that's the studio cut, and then there's Ayer's cut, so...
That's interesting. The studio cut, I'm assuming, is the one that was shown.
Yes. And from my understanding, and this is where the political game and all of this gets confusing, because Ayer, you know, as recently as the week of the release, was saying, no, there's only one cut of the movie. There's not going to be an ultimate, because people were already asking, is there going to be a BVS type ultimate cut or director's edition? He's like, no, my vision is what you see on the screen. There's not going to be any other cut. So they're kind of backed into a corner there, but they've been good at doing that to themselves this whole time, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. So, Tony, you brought a link that goes along with this story.
Yeah. This this ties in nicely. You would think we planned this. We did. We totally planned this. it's a hilarious story to me. And basically, a patron, a guy, saw the movie in England, who drove a long way from Scotland to see it. He is suing Warner Brothers, or attempting to sue Warner Brothers, because he felt like there was not enough Joker. He was tricked into thinking there was more Joker. He wasn't satisfied with the level of Joker, and so his brother's a lawyer, and they decided, we're suing the movie studio.
Yeah, that's not gonna go anywhere.
it's fascinating to me. I mean, I'm sure Warner Brothers hates for their audience to feel duped. But also, I don't know how you quantify how much Joker you were supposed to get based on the preview, you know?
Well, and I think in his claim, he's naming there were very specific scenes that were in there that are not in the previews, that were not in the movies. And I mean, kind of reading through what he's saying, I mean, he's liking it to false advertising, you know?
It's a well-written case. I will say that. it makes a good argument, but I just don't, you know, that there's a lot of movies where every scene doesn't show up.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I would agree with that.
Well, yeah, I was going to make that point. But one of the arguments that is very interesting is all of the promotional materials, the posters, everything. Joker was all over all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was kind of the lead. Him and Harley were the lead mm-hmm. advertising for this whole film. And while we did get plenty of Harley in the film, and I thought she's one of the better characters personally, I kind of felt like we got more Batman than we did Joker in the film. You know, and he's not even credited as a role. It's a cameo, uncredited role for Ben Affleck. And I thought possibly going into it, I didn't have my hopes up. I thought, oh, we'll get the Batmobile. We'll get like a stand-in shadow something. And no, you know, Ben Affleck actually has some lines. He gets to punch Harley in the face. Well, that was fun. You know, not sexist. That's a whole cartoon thing.
there was plenty of Batman. I'm with you. Maybe too much Batman.
You know,
I don't know about that. Yeah.
That's a bold claim.
I mean, a little bit of Batman never hurt anybody.
I mean, I didn't see on the Batmobile. Did you notice that the tag said Martha on it? Did you see that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, ask the criminals in Gotham how bad a little bit of Batman hurt them.
So what do you guys think? Like, I mean, regardless of a court case going through, do you think the audience or yourself was duped?
I think, if I can jump in here, I think that the court case itself is ludicrous and will get thrown. It's been accepted, but I don't think he's going to win. But he does have some merit to what it, because I just read his Reddit post there that you linked to. He has some merit in what he's saying. You know, movie studios keep putting out these trailers and TV spots and, you know, all of this content that shows these scenes to advertise their film. And then you show up for the film and none of it is present.
Mm-hmm.
And that is very misleading. I mean, that's like, we're almost getting to the point with this Joker conversation. It's like, you represented this as a movie where Joker was integral to the plot and he's not. He's you know.
No, yeah, not at all. Yeah.
He's barely, you know, a grade above a cameo.
Honestly, you could have taken out that whole helicopter scene. It would not have changed the story other than that emotional roller coaster that Harley went on. Right.
Yeah.
But she leaves with him. He gets something happens.
About too yeah. many spoilers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so sorry, everybody.
There's this. It's a hard movie to spoil.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, yeah.
But I go into a film. Now, I was talking about somebody off the air, or not somebody, but a show off the air, and this is not in reference to that. But I personally, if I want to go see a film, I go in wanting to be happy. I will go ahead and take all the heat in the world for loving the Transformers films. I'm not saying they're Oscar winning. I'm not even saying there's a story to it.
All right, folks, that's it. Thank you for joining us. It's been a great run, and we'll see you all on the flip.
I'm saying as a child inside of me, I go and going, oh, my God, big-ass robots. That's awesome. That's how I approach a film.
You know what would be even more awesome is if you could actually see those giant robots doing anything.
Hmm.
We're not here to ruin my childhood, Clot. Stop it.
Michael Bay took care of that.
Screw you guys.
Your childhood and my childhood are very similar, and in our childhood, those poorly drawn robots were visible in all of their scenes.
I'm just saying, I go in looking to be entertained, and it takes a lot for me to not like a movie. Now, I came out and I was on the round table last week and I gave my honest opinion. I know there's issues with the film, but I enjoyed it. You know, I enjoyed Batman versus Superman, and enjoying it and having it be a defendable film is two different things, right? Where do we draw the line? Where do we draw the line in these advertisings and these advertisements rather that says, okay, I want to go in and enjoy it. Oh, I didn't get enough of what I enjoy. I mean, do we drag every movie company through the mud when they make kind of a crappy film that we thought was going to be good?
It's not necessarily a question of whether you enjoyed it or not. I mean, that's subjective.
That is subjective, mm-hmm. absolutely.
And, you know, that's going to be impossible to quantify in a real fashion. But what you can hold these companies responsible for is demonstrating a product that is not present.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what this guy is saying. He's saying, you know, the post isn't very well written, but he lists a number of Joker scenes and then a couple katana scenes as well that just never appeared in the film. And so the thing is, when you're using, I understand that the occasional scene or the nuance of an occasional scene might get cut in the final edit. I get that. And, but you know, it might be shown in an early trailer and not make it, but it shouldn't be. This is excessive. You know, this is a lot of scenes. This is a lot of key moments that you're trying to sell this film with that never appear. You know, trailers show highlight some of the best parts of a film or TV show. And if those best moments never appear in that final product, you just feel cheated. You feel like, oh, I wanted to see that really badass moment, and it's not there. It's just that, you know, it's gone. And that's that I think is a fair criticism, and I do think that that is false advertising. You're demonstrating a product that you're not delivering on, and that is, you know, pretty much unacceptable.
Now,
but I do think that this is the year of the edit. Like, I think this is the year where, you know, the final cut on these films is going to be under incredible scrutiny, because that's one of the things we talk about with BVS. It's one of the things we've talked about. Well, Ghostbusters, you know, I know you wanted to mention that a little bit too. Ghostbusters being a film that I personally, based on the early trailers, was very negative about. You know, I did not expect to enjoy that movie at all. I thought it was going to be a base approximation of what, you know, what they were showing in those trailers. And when I went to see it, while it didn't blow me away, it's not my favorite film of the year, it was a fun movie. I had a good time. I got my money's worth. And it was not what was represented in those early trailers. It was not nearly as...
Sorry to interrupt. I liked Ghostbusters, the movie, the new one, way better than the trailers and the previews.
Right. And I felt the exact same way.
So does it balance out? Like, is it one of those things where the movies as a whole, sometimes you get a little extra, sometimes you get a little less, and in the end it kind of washes out?
Well, I think that's really the question. Is it fair to represent your product as something that it's not?
And that's you're right about that. But a little different question I would like to ask is, would we, other than the, not the misrepresentation, okay, but going with BVS, going with, take the whole Joker misrepresentation out of this one, but other than that, seeing the previews in the film, would we be as hard on these films if they were released the same year as Iron Man and The Incredible Hulk? You know, both studios taking their first steps together, would we be as hard on the DC films as we are now?
I don't think we're just hard on DC films, though.
But, and see, I guess my issue with the way they're doing this is it's kind of twofold what's happening. And I mentioned it on the roundtable as well, is with DC films, now what we have is a case of, you give me a trailer, you don't give me what was in the trailer when I spend my $9 to $15 at the movie theater, but then you expect me to go ahead and pay you $30 when you come out with not only the theatrical release, but then a week or two after that, on DVD, you do the ultimate cut. Why didn't you give me the ultimate cut in the theater?
Right.
Why didn't you give me what you represented in that trailer in the theater? If DC doesn't understand that if they make a good movie and put it out in the theater, that I'm going to buy the DVD when it comes out, I don't know what to tell them, because I don't want to have two copies of that movie.
Right.
I don't want to have to see two different versions of this friggin' movie. Show me the movie that you wanted to show me.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I absolutely agree with that. That, you know, oh, and a side note, Amazon.com has BVS The Ultimate Edition on sale for $15 right now. If you go, it helps us out. If you go to Breaking the Panel on Facebook, facebook.com/Breaking the Panel, there's a link there. And if you click on it, you can get it for $15. And my thought was, this movie came out for $35 originally, The Ultimate Cut. And. I know that's the list price. I don't know if it ever sold for that.
Would they like to borrow, you know, my car for a day or two as well? I mean, like, would they like to rent a room
but
in my home?
It hasn't been out that long, and it dropped to $15. And I think this plays with what you guys are saying, is if you put out a film in the theater and before the film comes out, you announce there's going to be a director's cut. Now, we're all familiar with director's cuts and extended editions and stuff that is unrated edition, because it's not the theatrical one. They went back and put together what the director wanted or added more footage, whatever. But to do that in this case, the timing was bad with Deadpool, right? Because Deadpool was doing so great. The timing was bad that they made the announcement they were going to release an R-rated extended edition cut. However, to come with a second film, Suicide Squad, and make us feel like there's stuff missing. And if you do, I'm with you, Chris. If you do in this case, come out with an extended edition, whatever they want to call it, the Squad Up edition, whatever, where it's the extra footage. We, as a whole, and I'm talking about the three of us. Of course, Tony, you get to say your own piece. But I think the three of us are going to go, and Ibbot included, is going to say, we're probably not going to go to the theater that much or not rush to it, because why would we go to the theater to know that you're going to put out a better edition of the movie later?
No, I agree with that. Exactly. It's like they're intentionally withholding, you know, a good footage or a good film, which is very deceiving. It kind of goes back to the whole feeling like people are tricked or deceived or being taken advantage of.
It's the fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice. You know, I'm dead now.
I actually suspect that the problem we have here is at its core the fact that we have two opposing forces going on in the creation of this content. And that is, you have your artistic types and you have your media, you know, marketing types.
Your marketing, yep.
Mm-hmm.
And every time we get a problem like this, I mean, look at the Fantastic Four. We have another article about the Fantastic Four movie, about what it could have been. And in that article, it says, ultimately, they didn't go the other way because of money. And the studios keep making these, quote unquote, creative decisions based on marketing and finances and all that stuff. And my response to that is, you are setting yourself up for failure, because you're making inherently creative material that people care about a great deal and care about, you know, the source elements of that creativity, you know, the recipe that's at the heart of the goulash, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And you're messing with it, and you're doing it in a very uncreative way, and you're spoiling it. You know, you're just, you know, homogenizing it. And exactly. You think you're reaching a broader audience that way, and you're not. You're alienating the audience you already have, and everybody else is just not thrilled with it. You know what I mean? Hardcore DC fans are upset with both of these films, but the non-hardcore DC fans are just like, meh, whatever, you know? You've got to stop doing that. You've got to let the creative types get in there. Deadpool was a success. Yeah. Because the director and the producers and the writers
and the
main star were passionate about that product. They had to fight to show that it was marketable. They had to fight to get their own creative, you know, take on it. And when they did, they made the best product.
They did it with almost no money.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They made it work. You know what I mean? And they created an amazing product. And people loved it. And it was wildly successful. It's made a ton of money. And they're going to make more. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. So let the creative types get in there. Now, I'm not saying you have to let somebody take the comic book films and, you know, try to turn them into art.
Yui Ball?
Yui Ball might be the perfect example of what is wrong with that.
Right.
He's a guy who's like, I just make movies for, you know, to be entertaining or whatever. It's like, well, you don't have a creative bone in your body and you've ruined everything you've ever touched. So that's maybe you should take a cue from that. And he's got that stubborn attitude, too. And these studios do, too. They're like, well, you know, we have to make these profitable. And we have to, you know, we have a responsibility. And it's like, well, you would make them profitable if you let the kind of people who took the original source material and made that profitable when it was on the comic book page or, you know, in the animated realm or just, you know, all the things that led up to where we're at today, where it's you're sitting in a reality where you can produce this content and make money off of it. How about you talk to those people who paved that road?
Yeah.
Because if you want to make more roads and outlets and everything, they're the people you need to know how they got there, you know. And it's like, that's my thing, is they're cutting out the creative side of it, and they're just trying to make everything to formula to appeal to the most audiences and to make the most dollars. And it's like, but that's, you're losing the heart of it, and that's how you're losing the fans.
Well, and I think maybe this is, that gets to the heart of why I get so upset with Warner Brothers and the way they're handling the DC properties. Because you look at the MCU, there's a proven track record for success on how to develop these universes. They don't want to go with that. That's fine. I'm not going to say you have to stick 100% to what came before. But they've shown a path that works, and it works well. DC doesn't want to do that. In the same year that you see the success of Deadpool, they're like, yeah, no, we're not going to handle it. But at the same time that they decide they're not going to do it like Deadpool and give those creators the creative control that they need to make it, every time you see a producer open his mouth, or even the directors of these DCEU properties, they're like, oh, that's the best part of DC. Over in MCU, they got Kevin Feige that rules with an iron fist, and he decides the direction of the universe. I don't have that in DC. They give me creative control of my movie. No, they don't, because then 2 weeks later, when your movie tanks, you're like, well, they came in and they did their own stuff. So which is it?
I think there's definitely a line of DC that just wants to make films to piss Chris Wisdom off.
Yeah, it's like, that's what it feels.
Now, you mentioned the MCU, and I want to wrap up this topic. We got so many more topics to go, but I want to wrap up saying, with the MCU movies, they feel whole, they feel good. So if they came out and said, for the DVD, we're giving you an extended cut or a director's cut, we wouldn't be upset going, oh, you held back, because we left the film going, that was a complete story. And as much as I did enjoy BVS and I did enjoy Suicide Squad, I can be honest and say it never felt like a complete story. It felt like there were pieces missing, and then here's the pieces. So there, mm-hmm. It is definitely a perception thing.
That's how the Deadpool DVD handled it. You know, they had some of the extended scenes that they even showed the original, you know, the base model animations and everything. Like, well, this is how we storyboarded it out, and this is the cuts we made, and this is why we did it. And they showed it to you, and you got to see a couple of the extra jokes that didn't make the final cut. You got, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it was amazing. And it was like, that's why I buy your DVD or Blu-ray, for that extra content, because you made a complete film that I loved, and then I'm going to go buy it to own it forever, and I'm going to go watch all that extra stuff, because that's really freaking cool too.
Right.
You know?
All right, so we had a little bit of difficulty with the connections. Apparently, Tony and I couldn't hear each other. We're just talking along, as we do. So, Tony, you had something to say. What do you got?
Yeah. I really agreed with the point that was made about the studios trying to make them all the same and kind of using that cookie cutter. And it really does, and it never dawned on me until you mentioned that. I forgot where I was going with the point. You get it live, or it's gone forever. What I was going to say was, and so it's hard. The hardcore fans are kind of hard to please, but they're not happy. But then it's really the casual, which I think make up the bigger market. And like someone said, they're just meh, because it's the same old thing that you saw in the previous movie, and the movie before that, and the movie before that. Mm-hmm. And that's, I know you guys were raving about Deadpool, which I love. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's not something that you get every other weekend when a new movie comes out.
Yeah. And seeing Deadpool, I think, is where I would, that would be my counter to you saying that the hardcore fans are the ones that are hard to please. Do the easiest thing and give me the source material. Be true to the page.
I firmly believe that if you find a way to please the hardcore fans, their excitement will overflow and it will bring everybody to it. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. That has always been my experience. When I've gotten into something new that I wasn't exposed to before, it was usually because I saw a lot of craziness around something, a lot of hype, a lot of excitement, and that brought me to it like a moth to the flame. And then I was like, oh, this is really cool. And then I got into it, and because I discovered this community of people who were passionate about it and they were excited with something. And he, you know what I mean? I really think that's what the second Batman, you know, Nolan Batman film really did. The first one was great and it was good with a broad audience, but then the second film was so on point, particularly Heath Ledger's portrayal of the Joker, that people who were big fans really loved it still. And then the public loved it as well. And it's that excitement, you know. But when you fail to please the hardcore fan, they are going to take a dump all over your product. And when they take a dump on it, that hits, you know, the blogosphere, it hits social media, it hits Reddit, it hits everywhere. And when they dump on it, everybody else is going to think, oh, well, it can't be that good.
A big vocal dump, yes.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So I think we had another error. So I hope I'm not talking over Tony here. But here, everybody knows we love the Loot Crate. Loot Crate loves the Suicide Squad and everything else that's going on. In August, you only have a day or two left. Actually, by the time this publishes, it's going to be too late. So let me go ahead and tell you about what's going on next month. We don't know, but we know it's going to be awesome stuff. We don't have the theme yet for next month, But Loot Crate's a monthly subscription box service for Epic Geek and Gamer items. You know what it is. $20 a month, actually less than $20 a month, get you a box of awesome sauce to your mailbox. You got to get in by the 19th of each month to get that theme. On the next show, we'll have the theme for September. Make sure you head over to lootcrate.com/giantsizeteamup and enter code giantsizeteamup to save $3 off of any subscription. All right. So this is going interesting. Tony, I don't think you can hear me now.
I'm here. I can hear
you. Oh, you can. Okay. I got another VoIP thing message. Oh, crap. All right. So let's, Mike's going to have some editing to do, unfortunately. Okay, here we go. Netflix and Marvel rumored to be casting a Microchip for Punisher. Now, I'm not all that familiar with the villain Microchip. Is anybody here familiar?
He's not really a villain. He's Punisher's weasel.
Oh, is he? Is he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the best way to look at him. He's not as sidekicky comic reliefy, but he's a guy that gets his contracts. He's how you contact Frank Castle, and I want to say he helps get the gear and stuff as well.
According to the picture on the article here, and this is from our good friends over at geekgirlauthority.com, Matt Key wrote this article, and we hope to actually have him on the show here in the near future.
Not without Kevin.
one step at a time.
That's
one
his admission. That's the price of admission.
Oh my goodness. So the hit Marvel series is out for blah blah blah. Let's try this again. The hit series for Marvel out from Netflix, Daredevil, introduced us to Frank Castle, aka the Punisher, earlier this year in their second season. The character is so well received, and the actor portraying him, Jon Bernthal, did so well that the character got his own series. While we don't have an exact release date yet, we do have this new rumor from MCU Exchange that the series is looking to cast Frank Castle's longtime associate, David Lieberman, better known to us as Microchip. So who do you think they'll get to play him?
Based on the picture?
Yeah, based panel? On the picture. Yeah, based on this panel.
Newman.
Yes,
I'm saying the same exact thing, man.
Do you, Tony? Do you think that they'll actually do the whole Microchip thing?
I was not familiar with Microchip.
Yeah, me either. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I would hope so. I mean, he's one of the regular side characters go along with Frank Castle, so it makes sense to have him in the show, and it'll give him somebody good to play off of. So
he's got to have somebody, right? I mean. Mm-hmm. A lone wolf movie. I'm not movie, but series. Well, actually, no. A lone wolf movie might work, but I don't know that a lone wolf series would work.
Yeah, you have to give him somebody that he can drop his guard with as much as Frank Castle's able to drop his guard with anybody, because, you know, right. he is the quintessential lone wolf, more so than most anybody in comics. So to make him relatable, you have to give him somebody that he can drop his card with, the same way you did with What's Her Butt in Daredevil, the redhead.
What's Her Butt? That's her official title in the show.
That is.
she is cast as What's Her Butt.
What's Her Butt.
But this actually feels more like an Oracle than an anchor. I mean, I guess Oracle is kind of an anchor. But I don't know. Klotz, you got any thoughts on it?
I did not.
So, you know what? That was short. Let's talk about something that's not planned here. Stranger Things, spoiler free. Everybody on board?
Yeah, no, not spoiler free.
You have to. I've only done like 3 episodes. I can't do it.
I'm down. Let's do this.
Let's do it. All right. So, Klotz, I haven't heard you this excited in a while. Why don't you lead the Stranger Things discussion?
Basically, the long and short of it is Stranger Things is everything that I was just talking about in the prior subjects. It is a project that is clearly made by creative people who are tapping into a certain era of filmmaking and storytelling, and they have recreated it in such a phenomenal way, such an incredible experience. Stranger Things is on Netflix. It's a Netflix exclusive. There's only 8 episodes, hour-long episodes. This is the most binge-worthy thing I have seen in years. I mean, this is something that virtually everybody I've talked to who've picked it up, they finish it in a day or two. I mean, even people who have busy lives. unlike myself. and so, you know, the basic gist of it is it's very reminiscent of, you know, your early to mid 80s, you know, adventure, thriller, horror films. Like, it kind of combines them all together. There's a lot of questions and excitement, and it's all predicated around the absence of, or a sudden disappearance of, a young boy who's in the beginning of the show is staying late at a friend's house playing Dungeons and Dragons, of all things. And on his way home, he goes missing. And he's one of four boys that were really close, and they were playing the game together and everything. And it is so artfully crafted, this show, because the references are unreal without being like, they're not, this isn't like a show that goes out of its way to reference certain things and be very obvious about it. It's more of a reference to the vibe, to the feel of that era. Stephen King on his Twitter tweeted that he could have wrote this. You know, he could have made this. This is something that could very well have come out of, you know, his association with a production company in the 80s or even the 90s.
Nice.
It very much has the vibe of the Goonies. It has the vibe of, there's a little bit of 16 Candles. There's a little bit of, you know.
Let me hit the timeout. I'm going to do the rundown. Because I got it hits all the best notes of Goonies, E.T., It, Stand By Me, Cujo, Poltergeist, Something Wicked This Way Comes, Akira, a little dash of Twin Peaks goodness. There's bits of Daryl in there. All of this wrapped up with synthesizers that would make Kubrick's Shining jealous. John Carpenter is creeped out by the music in this show. It's so awesome.
Now, it's incredible.
Well, when it first hit, and Chris Wisdom was one of the first, I think it was you, Chris, I saw a post about it first, early on. And I believe you said it was Stephen King meets Steven Spielberg.
Yes.
And at first, I thought you meant for real, like the two of them teamed up to do a show. I'm like, oh my God, I have to watch that. And then when I realized it was a reference instead of a literal thing, I was like, still good show. I gotta tell you, because I'm only three episodes in, and we don't want to do any spoilers, because if you haven't watched it, it's spoiler filled. I mean, it really is. You just have to watch it. But I gotta say, my favorite parts, aside from some spoiler moments, are every time they pan through a house or pan through a situation, and it takes me back to my childhood. The first episode, they're inside of the kid who ends up going missing, his house, and the camera's panning through, and I see a big box metal fan. I'm like, because I'm a huge thing. I have a thing with fans, man. I love fans. I love moving air all the time, and I do have one of those new Dyson Silence fans. It's really badass. But I love the metal ones. They lasted forever. I grew up with the metal fans, and you can't get those anymore. And I went, I had one of those. I had one of those in my house. Oh my God, I missed the metal fan. And you'll have those moments. If you grew up in the 80s or early 90s, you'll go, I had that kind of phone, or I had this kind of thing, or, and I never dressed like these idiots. I mean, I'd never dressed in the style of the ages. Yeah, I don't even today. I definitely don't dress like a hipster, which I think is the 2010 to 2020 look. But are you guys having moments like that where you're like, oh my God, they're, I mean, obviously the D&D kicks in for some of us, but
the nostalgia is real.
Yeah.
I mean, it is dripping from this show. It's just amazing. It's so good. And every single actor on the show puts in an exceptional performance. The kids, see, because there's multiple plot lines. I'm trying very hard not to give any spoilers at all, but there's multiple plot lines going on. One of the plot lines follows the kids who are, you know, the missing boy Will's friends. And this is their best friend. They're super invested in trying to find this kid. And so they're running around doing the Goonies thing, like trying to investigate and, you know, and in many ways, because they have that childlike, you know, sense of like adventure and childlike wonder, they're not jaded and cynical, and they're not, you know, they don't not believe that things could be exceptional or strange, or that crazy things could be going on, because that hasn't been beaten out of them by real life yet. You know what I mean? And so they're running around, and they never get in a ridiculous situation that is just so out of, you know, they never do anything that is completely outside of the realm of what kids are capable of. And that's one of my favorite things about it, is it was so cool because it was so accurate to how, you know, our childhoods growing up in that era, that's the way we behaved. Like, that's the kind of stuff that we did. I could see myself doing everything that they did. And then you also have the storyline of one of the main boys' older sister, who's a teenager. They're all in middle school. She's a teenager. And, you know, so she's early on in the series. he's like kind of seeing this guy who's like the guy, like the popular quarterback type guy. He seems a little douchey at first. What's really great about that is both of those characters have a tremendous amount of development over the 8 episodes. You get to see them go through different things together and apart and arrive at different points. There's also Will's older brother is kind of the weird kid. And he has a relationship with Nancy, the teenager girl, and they just like, there's a lot going on with all of them. And so you see like the kid's perspective, you see the teenager's perspective, and then there's a lot to do with the adults in the town, particularly the local chief of police who has been through a lot. He has some stuff in his history that kind of informs his character and how he's approaching this whole thing and why he's taking it so seriously. It's just so good. So there's lots of different perspectives on the same story. They're all trying to find the kid. They're all trying to figure out what's going on. And then there's this whole supernatural aspect to it as well. And it was all done so, so, so well.
The sheriff has been a shining point for sure.
Which is really funny because he was in Suicide Squad too, briefly.
Yep. Yeah, briefly. And just in case you're wondering why we're not asking Tony what he thinks, there has been yet another technical issue on the side. He's working on it, but he is not in. But definitely the glowing recommendation from this panel is go watch this on Netflix.
This definitely is something that you need to watch as soon as possible, and you will be starving for more content. I cannot wait.
And this is a perfect example of why creative things hit so many notes, because the creative stuff that has come out of the fans post this show releasing has been incredible. I mean, you get things from artwork to figures to that Stranger Things gets an 80s sitcom makeover, where they put it to an 80s sitcom opening music is so perfect. There's so many different things that come out in so many different veins. There's that rap song that Paul shared with me the other day that was hilarious. It's so good, and it makes people happy. It elevates everybody, and it gets everybody's juices flowing.
One of the great things I saw yesterday on Facebook was the greatest Pokemon evolution ever, and it showed the girl from the show. Then it showed Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
No,
and then
nice. It
showed Furiosa from Mad Max. Yes. It was so great. That transition from 11 to I was like, oh man, that's other thing I really wanted to talk about is this is the kind of show that makes you ask questions like a Lost would or mm-hmm. X-Files or, you know, any of those great mystery-based shows. But they do not form so many questions that you don't ever get any answers, which is one mm-hmm. of my biggest pet peeves. By the end of this first season, the first 8 episodes here, you get a resolution to the main storyline of this first season, but you do not get a resolution of the series. There's obviously more ahead, but you get a good stopping point. You get a stopping point that is comfortable. It's like, okay, I finished the first book in this, what I hope to be amazing multi, you know, I hope this show goes on for 10 years, if I'm honest. Mm-hmm. I don't think it will, but I mean, I think this show is one of those shows that has an easy 3, 4, 5 really exceptional seasons in it. And I hope that everybody involved just walks away before it ever loses sight of how good it is right now, if it ever gets dangerously close to that. This was just, it was amazing. And, you know, it's like, there's craft in it too. If you're a fan of filmmaking as a craft, there is so much technique. There is so much, oh man. And the synthesizer, I'm done. I gotta stop. I can't speak highly enough about this show. Like you said, McFall, I haven't been this floored by something in a very long time.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. You know what else brings the nostalgia thoughts?
What?
Pokemon Go, man. And
it does.
I know. And for those who collected, I can't wait. Klotz is about to get into the game. He's going to become a guest on the show because I very much want to hear his insights from a gaming and nostalgia standpoint. But we have a brand new show on Giant Size Team Up Network called the Pokemon Go Podcast. So check that out.
We do.
It's so amazing. It's fun. Ibbett and I are the showrunners over there, along with Bo York and Joe Ard, and it's a lot of fun. And soon to have guests such as Klotz and other people. Actually, next week, not this week, but next week, Ellie Collins, who we had on Breaking the Pan, from the Nugget, she's going to be on. Yeah, she's going to be on Pokemon Go.
So you're letting her out of the corner?
You know, she did her time. She stirred up the pot with the Joss Whedon stuff, and then she had to sit in the corner for a while, but she's getting to come back.
I never forget. Okay. Just a reminder of that.
Well, get on a plane to come to Dragon Con, and you can tell her yourself. It'll be fun.
Oh, jeez.
All right, here's a new story. Marvel and Hulu announced Runaway TV series. Now, I am a huge fan of The Runaways. It's a weird thing because I was a grown man when I found this thing. It looks like a teeny bopper comic book, but something about the art, I think it was. This is a Bendis book, isn't it? Or is it a Vaughn book? Is it Brian K. Vaughn or Michael Bendis? Can't remember. So Chris, you're supposed to be Googling these things while I'm asking.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, it's Brian K. Vaughn and Adrian Alfano.
Don't talk about Matt and the price of admissions. If I can't go, who does this book and not get an answer from the expert comic guy on the panel? So Vaughn, right? So he and Bendis are one of my two favorites. So I saw Vaughn on this. All right, I'll pick it up. Great series. It is an amazing series. It blew me away. Marvel Television today, whenever this article was published, it looks like it was published today, actually, announced it'll bring the cult favorite comic book series Runaways to television via Hulu streaming service. Runaways follows a group of six teenagers in the Marvel Universe, Nico Minoru, Carolina Dean, Molly Hayes, Chase Stein, Alex Wilder, and Gertrude Yorks, who discover that their parents are secretly members of a supervillain cabal called The Pride. After deciding they're no longer safe in their own homes, the kids go on the run. In the midst of hiding from their elders, the teens learn about themselves and become a family of their own. There are powers involved, for sure. Now, here's an interesting kink in the armor. I'm wondering what's going to happen here. Is that Fox owns the word mutants. One of these kids is a mutant. And I'm wondering how they're going to deal with that. I wonder if they're going to make it an Inhuman.
I'm pretty sure you mean an Inhuman.
I'm talking about from the comic standpoint, sir.
I'm sorry. I don't... The word mutant doesn't register with me anymore. I believe you mean an Inhuman. Well, I mean...
I hope not.
To answer your question, I think that's the angle. Like, they're just going to... I think it's very clear now that Marvel is going to change any mutants that haven't been represented yet into Inhumans, and then they're hunky-dory and, you know, they have no problems. That's my thought.
You're probably right, but with what they've done with Inhumans on S.H.I.E.L.D., I'm going to go with Chris on what he was saying earlier. Be true to the pages. Give me the source material. I know this source material is an 18-book run the first time I've read it like five times. So I know the source material on this probably better than anything else I've ever read. And then combined with what they did with Inhumans on Aces of S.H.I.E.L.D., I'm not super excited about that twist if they decide to do that. However, I will take it. I'll take whatever you give me, because as long as Marvel stays true to what they've been doing with TV as much as they can, you know, I do. Let me ask you guys this, because I know I have hesitations. Do you have hesitations because it's Hulu instead of Netflix?
Not at all.
My hesitation isn't so much that it's Hulu versus Netflix. My hesitation is the success that Marvel possibly has seen with Teen Titans Go and Teen Titans. And I worry that maybe this is going to be their attempt into that.
But is this... I didn't... go down to the bottom of this article. Is this going to be animation, or is this going to be...
Yeah, it's animated, I believe. Live action. That was my understanding, was it was animated.
Let's see if I can find out, because I know there was some comic stuff here, but I assumed it was live action. Let me see. I'm scanning here. I hate ads on sites. I've talked about that a couple different times. It makes me not scroll right. Nico's mother, Tina Minoru, will appear in the Doctor Strange movie prequel comic. Interesting. So it's already going to tie the series to the cinematic universe through that comic. Well, not really, because how many people actually read a prequel comic made just for a movie? Well, not that many.
A couple.
A couple. You know.
I don't know. They sold a lot of cereal before BVS.
Shut up. It doesn't necessarily say one way or the other here.
It must have been something else I read. I swear today at some point I thought I saw something about animated, but maybe not.
Okay.
In which case, then I'm not worried about it then. take that off.
Well, it could go either way. It's not saying live action. It's not saying animated. It talks about the history of the book. And then, of course, a prequel. But yeah, that's it. So we don't know. So animated, I would be more concerned, absolutely, if it's animated, because of what you're saying. It doesn't need to be Teen Titans Go, which I haven't actually watched. The only Teen Titans I know is the two. The original that was very kid-centric and that felt like Nickelodeon did it. That was still fun, but very silly and kid-centric. And then the second one after that where they brought in Superboy, which is more teen-centric. That one was decent.
Talking about there, I think.
No, this had Raven and everybody in the tower. It just had Superboy with them.
That was Young Justice.
Yeah, that's Young Justice.
Okay, I thought. Okay, here's the filthy casual, but I want to get some answers here. I thought Young Justice was the one with Aqualad and Kid Flash.
It is.
It is.
But that's also the only one that's had Superboy.
Okay. Maybe because the scene I saw. Now, I wasn't a huge watcher of it, and I guess I came across my kids watching or something. I'm trying to analyze the scene I have in my memory now, but I guess maybe I assumed it was a Teen Titans because in that scene there was a Robin and Raven.
All those characters are present on Young
Justice. Okay, so all right, so that's where my confusion comes from. Yeah. See, it's not that I'm retarded; it's that I just get things mixed up.
If it looks like the Powerpuff Girls, then it's Teen Titans or Teen Titans Go.
Gotcha. See, I haven't seen Go, but yeah, definitely Teen Titans was
that was them. That was them trying to revitalize the Teen Titans brand and going back to the well.
Yeah. But I love that they're tackling it. I'm trying to think of any Hulu originals I've really fallen in love with.
Difficult People.
I tried watching that and it didn't grab me. It was good, but it didn't grab me.
Casual is really good.
I haven't seen Casual. The ghost one, with Justin. I can't think of his name now, but he sees ghosts and stuff, and it has Cat. Cat Deeley.
Deadbeat.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed the first season, but it's not like a Netflix original where you love it or hate it. It's kind of like, all right, this is kind of cool. I can roll with this.
I kind of hated it at first, but then the more I watched it, the more, because my roommate was watching it, so I ended up watching it like by proxy. And then the more we watched it, the more I started to get it and like really enjoy it. And I particularly enjoyed the bit parts on it, like people coming in and playing a part for an episode or so.
Yes. Yes.
There are some great scenes. So you were kind of like touching on the topic earlier of like why Hulu over Netflix. I think it's simply because ABC owns a stake in Hulu.
I know a lot of the TV channels own stakes in Hulu.
And so the idea being that when you create a relationship with Netflix, you have to profit share with Netflix. But if you're not putting something out that is like, you know, on the Netflix level, like if you're not putting out a Punisher or a Daredevil or something like that, where you really need to avoid the typical limitations of broadcast TV, then I think you absolutely would put it on something that you already own a stake in and, you know, you don't really have to profit share with. And also I think we've created a brand, right? Well, they've created a brand. The Netflix Marvel brand is, these are the darker, more serious street level stories. Less on powers per se, more on people. You know what I mean?
Right.
I feel like Runaways, whether it's animated or not, is going to be a show that's going to have a lot of power representation. You know, so you're going to see a lot of powers and cool stuff like that. And maybe that's a bit more outside the realm of what the Netflix stuff is doing currently. Now, that being said, Iron Fist is coming, so that could totally change. You know, I mean, there's lots up in the air still. But yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. Now, Tony's back.
Hey, there he is.
Back again.
You're good.
It's been a journey, but I am here. So as I was saying, I agree with what you said about Deadpool. No, I'm
kidding. Very, very nice. Nicely done, sir. I think it's because in your contract, it said you didn't want to talk about Stranger Things, so we had to kick you for that part of the show. But, you know.
I missed Stranger Things.
We were just talking about this article with the Runaways coming to Hulu versus Netflix. Are you familiar with the Runaways at all?
No, not at all. I'm glad I got back just in time.
All right. Well, you know what? We're going to go pay some bills. Please listen to the sponsors. You know, they help us out. They take care of keeping the lights on and the food on the table and the tears that Chris sheds over BVS. You know, they mop them up too. So we'll be back in just a second. All right. Thanks for sticking through with ads. We're glad to have you back. We've got one more great story to talk about, and that is this thing that has hit the internet now. We all know the Fantastic Flop was horrible, and I actually suffered through it on HBO Go with my kids because they were wanting to see it because it was sci-fi and comic booky, and I had to have that serious talk that all parents have with their kids as they're becoming preteens and teenagers. And it's not about sex. I had that when they were six. It's about canon and about how canon works.
Charles,
yes.
BVS did make $800 million or thereabouts, so I don't think it's fair to call it a flop.
Oh, Sean, thank you so much, Chris. Stop.
I definitely wouldn't call it fantastic either.
You know, Klotz and Ibbit, you're going to have to help me out. One of these days when everybody's together and we're all drinking, we're going to get Chris blackout drunk and we're going to tattoo Martha on his back.
Oh, as a trance step?
Yes. I am you're killing me, man.
We'll get the heart on the bicep for him, and it'll be the mom heart, but it'll be Martha instead.
Nice, Tony. You're saying
I have to know on this panel who legit likes Batman versus Superman and who does not.
So I legitimately liked it. Klotz, you can answer for yourself.
I enjoyed it. I see some of its flaws. I don't think it's nearly as bad as some people have tried to portray it. But I definitely, like I said earlier, I think the creative people were not involved as much as they should have been. And, you know.
And Chris absolutely hates it.
No, I don't absolutely hate it.
No. According to Chris and his therapist, he feels like this movie went and killed his family and made him watch.
Because I couldn't say Martha fast enough.
No, go ahead, Chris. Tell him your opinion.
No, my thing is if I separate it from, you know, 75 years worth of continuity, and just look at it as a summer action movie, as a throwaway comic book movie, then yeah, I enjoyed it. I got my money's worth. But being as that I'm the DC guy on the show and Superman is my all-time favorite superhero, I feel betrayed. I feel let down. And as a Kansan, I feel betrayed and I feel let down.
To be fair, you did have a lot riding on that movie.
Oh. Yeah, because we all know nothing good comes out of Kansas except fake people in blue tights.
Just ask Zack Snyder.
Bring it back around. You always could sue Warner Brothers if you
like. I might have to.
You gave Kansas a bad name. I don't know why I used that voice. That was really stupid of me. All right, so no. Of course, we're talking about Fantastic Four and canon. Now, we all know an early version of the script can be written. And it'll change a dozen times. You know, so let's just say Chris writes it and then the studio takes it and they give it to Klotz to change it up. Then they take it from Klotz, they give it to Ibbit to change it up. I mean, it goes through a bunch of different hands and it could be a totally different movie by the end. So even with that in mind, I think Chris, you might be the most excited to talk about this last topic here.
Well, I don't know that I'm the most excited.
Read the damn article, Chris.
All right, so look, because I'm not super... Okay, so the original plan for Josh Trank's Fantastic Four sounds completely amazing. So there were a lot of reasons that the 2015 version of Fantastic Four failed, but one of them might have been cutting all of the elements from the original stories, ideas massive and completely bonkers battles. Now, this is what Klotz alluded to at the beginning of the show, that this it comes down to the almighty dollar and what the studios are willing to pay for. And there's a lot of cool stuff that the screenwriter is saying was going to be. Jeremy Slater said was originally supposed to be in the script. I don't know that it would have made the story any better, because I said it earlier today that we all saw in the movie that we just talked about what happens when you try to make a good comic book movie based on the buffet method of creativity. When you take a little bit of this story and a little bit of this story and a little bit of this story and you put it all on your plate, is it really that appetizing?
I like the Golden Corral. They could be a sponsor anytime they want.
I'm not saying. I'm, I'm not saying I don't, but it's not, that doesn't necessarily make a cohesive plate.
That's
just
true.
Because you add all four of their top villains in the same movie.
That's
plus
true.
You give me a little Herbie Love and claim that it's BB-8 before BB-8 ever existed.
Okay, so let's read what he says here.
Okay.
So,
in addition to Annihilus in the Negative Zone, we had Dr. Doom declaring war against the civilized world, the Mole Man unleashing a 60-foot genetically engineered monster in downtown Manhattan, a commando raid on the Baxter Foundation, a Saving Private Ryan-style finale pitting our heroes against an army of Doombots in war-torn Latveria, and a post-credit teaser featuring Galactus and the Silver Surfer destroying an entire planet. We had monsters and aliens and fantastic cars and a cute spherical Herbie robot that was basically BB-8 2 years before BB-8 ever existed, and if you think all of that sounds great, well, yeah, we did too. The problem was it would have been massively, massively expensive. And
that's true. I mean, just laying this out, that's 90% CGI, right?
Yeah.
Or practical effects, which is
more, perhaps more importantly, none of that sounds like Dr. Doom is a cyber terrorist.
True.
It doesn't sound like he's not.
Right. It sounds like Dr. Doom being the classical Dr. Doom. It sounds like the four being the classical four. I mean, so that
it does.
I don't know that like if everything that they just listed was going to be tried to jam into one film, that is an atrocity waiting to happen. Because you can't fit all those storylines in one film.
That's what I thought too. I mean, Annihilus is awesome. Okay, Doom. Okay, then you get to Mole Man. I was like, holy crap, that's a lot.
You know, Mole Man just seems like he just popped up in the middle of everything.
Yeah.
Like, look at my big monster. Like, no.
Much like a mole would do.
You certainly don't want to use an awesome character like that as a throwaway. Like, what was
kind of like
plan?
Rhino as a Russian in a robot suit, maybe?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Were you going to do the Rhino treatment? Well, then, you know, no, don't do that.
That's good advice. Just don't do that.
Don't do that. Once again, studios, as your friend, here's your friend, Paul Klotz, just telling you, I like movies and I like TV and I know a little bit about both. If you think that the steps that you're taking are going to, one, save money and two, make more money, and you're talking about a comic book property, you're wrong. And hand the controls back to that guy who wrote the script for you, because you're dumb, and you're doing it wrong. Bad. Hand it back to the creative guys. Now, certainly rein those guys in when they get too crazy, but like, you know, let the creative guys do their thing.
Well,
and gals.
You gotta kind of look at the phrasing of the article, because words mean things. And it says he wrote some versions of the original script. Which, of course, means they're, as you would with anything, different versions, different iterations. It doesn't necessarily mean that all four of these major things, or five or six or seven of these major things, were in every version of the script. Maybe one was just them fighting the Mole Man with a 60-foot genetically engineered monster. Maybe a different one, was fighting Annihilus in the Negative Zone. You know, it's not necessarily putting all these in together. He makes it kind of sound like that.
Well, yeah, when he says in addition to,
right,
and then if you think all of that sounds great, but well, and I saw another article that this isn't the first article that I read on it this morning. The first one I read said something about was it Doom that created it? A genetically engineered Tyrannosaurus named Annihilus. I'm like, okay, yeah, you lost me right there. But
yeah,
it never appears
no.
in his, that part never appeared in his comments. I'm like, where did you even pull that?
I love, you know, we love here at Breaking the Panel to do the what ifs and what could have beens. It's fun. But in reality, I don't know that what he's saying ever applied anywhere near towards the, even close to being the finished factor of the film.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, we all know that it totally tanked and it was very, very much crap. And I definitely had to have the difficult conversation with my kids about what canon means. And how this is, you can like this film. I will not ban you from my house because you're children. However, this is not canon, and it's actually hot garbage is what it is.
Let me ask you this, though, since I have an interesting panel on the line, and I'm actually back. What's TV doing right? Because it seems like a lot of the TV shows are doing their superheroes a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the big difference? Well, I mean, I know they get a lot more time to play with,
Okay, so to answer that, I guess, if it's not rhetorical. So if we look at the MCU, we got Kevin Feige. I always mispronounce his name. We have him as the overarching, you know, controlling guy. He's the one, at least until recently, he was the one that was giving the go-ahead on ideas, making the final calls, and it was unified. But you can tell that he was always involving creative forces. You know, you were always letting creative people come in, and we were trying to find a way to bring the stories on the page to the silver screen and do so, you know, in a way that is, you know, a modern take on it and is certainly more compatible with film, but like it still has the core of the characters, the core of the stories. It still feels like Iron Man. It still feels right. Like the Avengers, so on and so forth. And it's a unified plan. You see the same thing in the Berlantiverse. You have one key producer here who is the showrunner for a number of shows. Now, he doesn't carry all the weight of all those shows himself. He delegates, obviously, but again, he lets his creative people get in, and they've made some slips, but the DC TV shows are really solid overall. Arrow has its issues. Supergirl is finding its feet, but ultimately, like, what they've accomplished with Flash is incredible.
Yes.
You know, the two seasons we have of Flash so far are some of the best television that's been put out in a very long time. Mm-hmm. And so they found the recipe there, and MCU is
kind of. But like you said, there's been some missteps. But I think what you're, well, at least what I hear in this answer and what I think, and not putting words in your mouth, but to oversimplify it, is I think with the TV shows, the creatives and the money people got on the same page before they ever said go. Whereas with movies, it's a lot more money and a lot shorter time frame without. Sure. It's more like driving the Titanic, right? You can't just make this quick turns. Whereas Daredevil, you film five episodes and you go, well, let's make this quick little turn over here. And you can do that because it's more flexible. But I think, Tony, I want to hear your answer too, Tony, but I think that's my answer is that the creatives and the money people got the same goal. Like with Daredevil season one, they didn't get all the details, but said, this is what we want to do. We want to make it dark. We want to make it violent. We want to make it gritty. And we want this overcoming arc of he doesn't want to be the hero. He doesn't know what he's doing. He handles it wrong. And then here's how it builds to this character. And everybody went, yes, let's do that. And then you start plugging in the details. Whereas like with Fantastic Four, they probably had 10 different scripts. I'm being serious though. They probably had 10 different scripts and they finally mashed them together and made a studio cut with the money people making changes all along the way. And that's always bad juju. What's your answer, Tony?
I will say I really like the concept of having a good showrunner to kind of run these universes, if you will. I do think that helps a lot. For me, and it almost goes into a different topic, but I think movies have gotten to a point where they're just too expensive. Like these actors get paid, I don't want to say way too much. I don't want to sound like I'm jealous, but way too much in that there's no room for risk. And that goes to, like you were saying, course correcting and trying to get creative.
Sorry, Tony.
You're good.
I don't know if it's so much the actor, because yes, the actors get paid ridiculous amounts of money, especially when you're talking Robert Downey Jr. money.
Exactly.
But
he's the one.
That does not begin to compete with the marketing, the back end marketing money that gets spent on that. And that's one of Kevin Smith's biggest gripes about the movie industry. And I think it's well placed. When you have to double, if not triple, or when you double, if not triple, the budget of the movie to include the ridiculous amount of money the actors got paid just to advertise and market your movie, there's something wrong there.
I think it's a very good point.
I think there's another panel discussion there about why we pay actors so much. You know what I mean?
Or how we pay them. If we get them percentages instead of flat millions, then they would be more invested in
studios don't want to do that. Well, that's how they get burned.
And that's also how actors wouldn't take a film either, because we give a great performance. We're invested in making this movie work, but then you could totally screw us over in the editing room floor and put out a crappy film. And now we don't make anything. Yeah. But you're right. That is a thing. Now I know Chris might have to go now.
Yeah. Before I go, I just looked up some interesting numbers. Week two for Fantastic Four in 2015 displayed a 64.6% drop in box office revenue. That number was beaten by a certain movie that I'm sure Charles doesn't want me to say. So we'll just pretend like he said Martha, and I won't have to say the name.
God.
69.3 is all I'm saying. That is so fantastic.
I don't better watch movies because of numbers. I'm not saying it's the greatest film in the world. I'm saying
you're saying the Fantastic Four performed better than
it.
Let's hug it out.
Charles,
wait, have you ever
heard the key phrase of the internet? Don't feed the trolls.
Yes.
No.
So wait. We've got an expert.
I hear Tony in the background.
We got an expert. Tony, you deal with a Chris who irritates you. What do you do on your show?
Well, fortunately, he's a temporary fill-in. we just count the days.
We've been trying that too. Every episode we go, "You're fired, Chris," but he keeps coming back.
he doesn't leave.
But the drop off was more, but that doesn't mean it performed better.
Well, I'm just talking percentage wise. Yeah. Obviously, dollar for dollar, no, it did not.
So I'm just saying, never mind. You know, I was going to make a really, really bad joke about performance, and I'm sure.
Well, okay, so more back.
Don't have my fans call into the show, Charles. You don't want that.
To piggyback a little bit on what Tony was saying there, where he was asking the question about like the budgets and everything, I think the real elephant in the room is that perhaps film as a medium is not the future of this kind of storytelling.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's losing its relevancy across the board. And you've seen that trend in the last decade.
I think we as a society need to start accepting that and saying, all right, you know what? Film is still a great opportunity to tell a story in 2 hours or 90 minutes. You know what I mean? If it's a brief story, but film is not the place to, you know what I mean? Build a universe, tell all these huge stories. We need to accept that. And I think these production companies need to accept that. They need to realize that I know box office dollars are big, you know, it's big money and it's spectacle and all this, but it's like you're losing people all the time to the cost. Yeah. You're losing people all the time to the digital medium. So start approaching this as a progressive company. And I really do think Marvel's positioned themselves to do that. You know, and what they've done with Netflix is proving that.
If they just follow through with it, because imagine a world where you took all of, you know, phase one, all of those individual movies, and those were seasons on Netflix, and then you came together and the Avengers was your big blockbuster movie. That was your tentpole that year. And so then you don't have all these competing tent poles, but you're still getting plenty of buzz generated off of however it is you're releasing it. As long as you consistently give that quality that you're giving to Netflix, I don't care what channel it's on, but it's got to be that Netflix consistency or quality, and do it consistently. And you get that character development, you get people following these, and then you've given me somewhere between 13 and 23 hours with this character before you give me the team film.
Well, you know, I guess it was back in the 80s, and these numbers are probably totally off, but you'll get the point. I want to say in the 80s, there were maybe 100 theatrical releases a year.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you know, there's like 800, 900 or something ridiculous. So they have just diluted, and it loses that, I guess, really theatrical element. You know, there's a new movie every week and rushing them out and all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. So I really love that idea of building the universe on TV. And I know Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of tried to play in that ring a little bit, where network TV ties into the theatrical movie. Mm-hmm. But I think that's an awesome idea, and I would go for it.
Yeah.
You
go back to the creatives. You go back to the books where you got a year of reading about this character, and then there's a big crossover event that costs you more to buy it at the end of the year. That's what it should be. You get your TV character, and then you go to the big movie.
Our podcasting network is named after the key concept there.
It is.
The giant size team up. Like, those were those awesome issues back in the day. They were bigger than normal books. They had all these characters in them. They had these big epic stories, capstone moments. By all means, let's do that. Let's do that with a film. Let's have, you know, several concurrent shows. Because that's the other thing. You know, we've talked about it before. Like, what they're trying to do with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is they're trying to keep the MCU in the conversation at all times. You know, they want people tuning in. But that show is not pulling its weight. Mm-hmm. Just period. It's just not. So then, you know, let's take another approach to this. We can probably salvage that show if you stop running it like a terrible ABC show and start running it like a good Marvel show, which you're capable of doing.
Yep.
Absolutely.
You can probably put another couple shows on like this Runaways, whether it's animated or not. I mean, we've talked about it before, that you can make animated movies that tie into the continuity. People will be okay with it. I promise you. That maybe you don't want to do your major, you know, big epic plot shifts in those pieces, but you can still do great content that way.
Peppermint, absolutely. Definitely. Yeah, because yeah, that's we talked about that on one show, I think, when I was talking about you do like an Amazing Stories type platform, so you can have this anthology show and one that you know is going to be effects heavy. You know, if you want to do your Howard the Duck and you don't want to spend a butt ton on CGI, you do it animated and you still make it fit into continuity. And it's that the market saturation that you're talking about, we talked about early on in this podcast, that it used to be you competed at the opening of summer and then you had the next big blockbuster at the end of summer. And it was two competing film houses. It wasn't Disney competing with itself month yes. after month after
oh
month.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned the capstone issues. You know, I remember those things. You wanted to spend, you were excited for it. You wanted to spend the money.
Yeah.
You know, you were like, here is my money. I want that. So you build, you know, like you said, that the continuity. An analogy I always use is the old crack cocaine. Like the first taste is free.
Yeah.
You know, yep. And you're willing to spend the money. It's kind of a different road. But the point being, you know, if there was a big summer movie, like a Berlanti movie, $20 right now. If you
oh, yeah, absolutely. Yep.
I'd be there, you know, and I would be excited to be there, not just begrudgingly going because, well, it's Batman and Superman. I should support it.
And that's the thing. Like, what happened to those big network TV specials? Remember, they used to happen all the time when we were growing up. You know, the miniseries events and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Bring that back. You know, like, man, just like tap into the excitement of saying, okay, you know, for the next 4 weeks, you're going to get a hour and a half long piece of the story that's all, you know, that's going to tie all of our shows together and all the movies for the year. And we're going to do it leading into the summer movie season, or we're going to do it leading into the holiday season or something. You know what I mean?
Well, like, Berlanti's close with the crossovers and all those shows, but could you imagine taking your format, that miniseries, and put it to that instead?
You just asked for Marvel's take on the Thornbirds, dude.
All right. Well, Chris, I know you got to go.
Actually, I'm good.
Oh, you're good? Okay, good. Tony, we haven't got enough of you tonight, man. We had some issues, but you fought through.
I took a break and went and had a snack and...
You know,
we're higher energy. He needed a breather. It's cool.
Yeah. I thought he's like, damn it, another Chris. I gotta step away for a minute. I got it.
You know, I used to have an additional Chris on a different show of ours that I've since gave back to them. But I had so many Chris's. I just can't. You know, tell your mother, tell your parents, get creative with the name.
Yeah, see, you've had some Chris. You've had this Chris and you've had that Chris, but you've never had the Chris. And that's what's on this show.
One of my best friends is also named Chris, and I kind of hate him too. So.
You know, every Paul I've ever known is very much your mentality, Paul, of just dry wit sometimes and zingers and everything else.
And wonderful personality and fantastic company. And
remember, you're the whiny pony in my collection. So, yeah. But Tony, tell us about your show. Tell us about what you love about doing your show and anything else that's just burning in your heart right now.
Yeah, man. Again, it's the Geek Versus Week podcast, and we're at geekversus.com. And, you know, I can mention we're 2 episodes away from 100.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Don't tell anybody this. We recorded 100 early. We already recorded it. And it's a little, you know, spoiler for your fans. But what we did in that episode was it was kind of a Q&A with ourselves. And so we touched on, you know, why the hell are we doing this? And how have we made it this far? And it really spawned from the same group of friends. We used to stand outside, like after a movie or after some events in our town. And just chit chat about you know, oh, did you hear this news? What did you watch? You know, what's going on with this? What's going on with that? And it's the same conversation. So we're able to have it every week. Well, it's not the same show every week. But it's the same conversations we would have been having on the street or having with each other. So now just in a more barely organized way. And so that's what I love about it, man. It's an excuse to see these friends every week, talk about whatever. We, much like your format, everybody brings their own topics. I have no idea what the topics are beforehand. So as we're talking about it, we're having a real conversation. And so it's just fun, man. It's a blessing to be able to do it. And it sounds like you guys have something similar going on here.
No, we're way better.
Wait, you described your show as fun and a blessing. And I really kind of sometimes consider this to be a burden,
a chore.
This is
I'm the blessing. Just so you know, I'm the blessing.
Shut up, Chris. This sometimes is more akin to WWE than church.
Right. Off the top rope.
We all every show, you know, they have their Chris to bear.
Yes,
it's a good time, man. It's a lot of fun.
So, how come you aren't doing a live meetup at DragonCon for your 100th celebration?
One of the guys, actually, the main lineup is myself, my buddy Casey, and our friend Betty. Betty is in Orlando at the moment for like a 5-month internship at with Disney World.
What?
So that's where
serving Chris the devil come
fill in. Yeah. and then Casey can't make it this year, so I'm kind of doing DragonCon solo with some new friends. But we are going to try to kick off our video channel, our YouTube channel soon. So that's kind of how we're celebrating the 100. Personally, I think I'm going to buy some new equipment. So yeah, we'll do something big for like 110, some random episode.
All right. Klotz, you have anything left to say, sir?
I'm all set.
Chris, I'm not even asking you. Shut the hell up.
I've said all that needs to be said.
Yeah, yeah. Few last things. Of course, we are on Twitter. Hit us up on Twitter at Panel Breakers. We'd love to hear from you there. Facebook.com/BreakingThePanel. GiantSizeTeamUp.com. Of course, you can find us on iTunes. And we really need your support and love. Patreon.com/BreakingThePanel. We're going to start doing some extra things over there for Patreon and patrons who pledge to support the show. We really, really, really love that you do that, and it helps out a lot. So for the show, we want to thank guest Tony P. Henderson.
Hey, thank you. Real quick, man, you reached out to me to jump in and join you guys. I can't. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that enough, man. That's awesome. And had a good time when I was here. When I wasn't here, I was in the other room cursing the router. But while I was on the show, man, I had a great time. So thank you guys for having me.
And you're awesome. Thanks for being on. Yeah, definitely. Thanks for being here. That is Paul Klotz. That is Chris Wisdom. I'm the Rock God of Podcasting, Charles McFall. Mm-hmm. And we're going to take off, and I'm going to put my little ponies back in their box and put them up on the shelf.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel. And you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at GiantSizeTeamUp.com.
So, I don't know if Michael used this or not, but this popped into my head. I thought you guys would appreciate it. The official show is done, but this might be like an after credit singer or something. But I just showed my wife the Rogue One trailer, the new one that dropped, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And two things she said cracked me up. Now, it's late at night, and we're both not quite in our right minds, but she's watching. Of course, Forest Whitaker is amazing in this trailer, right? Mm-hmm. And she couldn't help herself. One of the characters said something, and then the scene went to Forest Whitaker. She goes, "Oh, that was so stupid. He gave her Forest Whitaker eye for it." And I fell off the couch laughing. Then at the end of it, I was like, she's trying to understand it right in the time frame. I said, "Okay. So movies 1, 2, and 3, she goes, "Oh, those are made in our lifetime." I'm like, "Okay, if that's how you want to remember it, yes, that's Anakin growing up becoming Darth Vader." And then there's the break in it, because at the end of 3, they have the twins, which is Luke and Leia. And then there's that, you know, break where they grow up and become adults. And then in 4, 5, 6, 4 being the real first one, we get Luke Skywalker And I keep trying to get to the end of the film to explain about the spies. She keeps interrupting me, trying to remember. She goes, well, where's Ray? I'm like, okay, no. That's number seven. That's over. I'm like drawing it out on paper and stuff. So finally I get her to understand. It's kind of set at the same time as number four, because they're doing the things in, you know, leading into four and partially
leading
through four.
Yeah.
Well, okay, in the timeline of four, there's possibility that towards the end of the film it overlaps a little bit, right? Because it's towards the end of A New Hope. Yeah, because
they will have gotten,
right.
plans, and that leads into New Hope, yep.
And I didn't even try to explain that part. I just said, yeah, basically it's right before four, and she goes, she yells. Now, this is like midnight, and her kids are sleeping. She goes, it's a 30-year flashback? What the fuck, man? I immediately had to pull out my phone and Twitter that stupid shit my wife said. Oh, we were just cracking up. I was like, well, kinda. Yeah, I guess.
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
Just imagine in your bedroom you had like newspaper clippings and strings and tying it all together.
Non-hardcore fans, it kind of takes that to explain where this falls.
Notebooks like from seven.
I was gonna go with like the Kaiser Soze moment at the end.
Yeah, looking at the bulletin board.
Wait a minute.